Well, here we are for morning, and who have I got on the line? Only Michael Harding. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Marty Whelan. It's lovely to be talking to you.
And to you, my friend. Listen, the first thing I have to say to you is, I got an awful fright. I got the distinct impression that you weren't so well recently.
Yeah, I had another old problem.
Right.
I was in Beaumont Hospital for a week. I had an operation there. And my goodness, when you see what they're doing in Beaumont Hospital, when you see the skill and the care and the compassion of every single worker in that hospital, from the consultants right through to everybody else, I was so lucky to be there and so grateful to come out. And I'm still alive.
You are, by the sound of things.
Yeah.
And you sound good, thank God.
Yeah, I sound relieved that I'm back in me health, because I had a little problem. It's something to do with the arteries.
Yeah.
Kind of taking blood in the wrong direction. It was serious enough, but they fixed it anyway for me. Thanks be to God.
They're very good in Beaumont. And I remember from one of the previous works. Do you remember? Well, you'd remember more than anyone when you were over in another part of Dublin and you found yourself ending up in hospital.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, at a certain age, you have to accept you're going to have a few little bangs, and you just feel grateful that you live in a country where the services are so really good and where the human resources are full of so much compassion and care in hospitals. I've got a friend going into Beaumont. She went in a couple of days ago, and she's having an operation this very morning. And it's a very serious operation, and she was very worried about it. And the amount of care and trouble the consultants went to reassure her, to phone her family, to get her family to phone her, to say, don't be worried, we know what we're doing, we'll be able to do it well. Yeah. You know, it's wonderful to have people who work in the health services, and when you see what's going on with COVID, you say, wear a mask. That's the way to help the people who work in hospitals.
That's it.
And be grateful that they're there for people who get sick.
Exactly. It's, as a fellow said, it's as
simple as that. I couldn't sing their praises higher enough, Marty. I'm delighted to hear it. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't sing your praises higher enough as well, but the joy I got with what is beautiful in the sky. God, it's a great read. It's fabulous.
Thank you so much.
I love it to bits. And I mean, you know, we follow you and we enjoy your adventures. And even if you're just talking about sitting in the back garden looking out at the mountain and all, it's just, do you know what it does? It takes me away when I read your books. And generally it's music. But it's music that normally does that for me. But when I read your books, I find myself in a quiet place. I can't, do you know what I'm going to tell you now?
Well, I think, go on.
No, I'm just going to say.
No, I think that you're right about music.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, what I was going to say is, I can't have anyone talking in the background when I'm reading your book. And I've studied and read books and researched things all my life with noise and everything around me and people. I can't have anybody around me when I'm reading your book. I need to be on my own. Isn't that mad?
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense to me, because I firmly believe that storytelling is like music. When you tell stories, it's like playing tunes on a fiddle or on a flute. It's like it's like a music that's in the air. It doesn't have a kind of a logic to it, storytelling. And I think that I write those stuff in that book and in all the books. I write it like I speak it out loud to myself when I'm going back through it.
Yes.
You know, to me, it isn't a sound craft. Storytelling. And you should, if you're reading that book, you should be able to nearly hear my voice in your ear.
Well, that's precisely what I do. And it takes me out of myself, which is not a bad thing either.
It's not a bad thing, is right.
No, it's not. I love that story about the woman in Bundoran. I remember I was a small boy and we went to Bundoran. I thought it was like going to somewhere, I thought it was in Spain, somewhere exotic, because we'd never been to Bundoran before. But I love the story. She was talking to you about, was it your driving or something? It was it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I was driving the van and she kind of chastised me for bad driving, you know. But I got rid of the camper van, when somebody says that to you, you shouldn't take umbrage. You know, somebody says, you better watch the way you're parking that car. They might be right, you know, and they might be saving you a couple of £1,000 by, you know, being more careful. I actually got rid of the camper van. Bundoran and I love, we used to call it Cavan Sur Mer.
Yes.
Cavan on the sea when I was young, because everybody from Cavan went to Bundoran in the summer when I was a child. And in fact, my mother and my granny used to go to Bundoran, so that if you went back into the 1900s and 1910, my granny and loads of other people were going from Cavan to Bundoran and taking their little rented boarding house for 2 weeks, and that's the way they had their holidays. And I have a daughter living in Bundoran. She's there surfing, and I just love Bundoran, and I miss Donegal. I miss Donegal now that we're all locked down and I can't get up to it.
But the point is, for those who followed you, Michael, you were going to buy a little house in that area, weren't you, Donegal?
But yeah, before we were.
So why did you not buy... Well, but before we come to the house, why is the van gone? This camper van was opening up your life. It was giving Michael Harding and his beloved a whole new sense of the road.
Do you know, I was going round in it last November, right? This time last year, and we did a few trips up to Glencolumbkill, and I lay in the back of it one or two times at night, and I'd be awake, and I'd get up in the morning, and you'd go out, and you'd walk around in the fog, and you'd say to yourself, my age here, I'm 67. Well, maybe now you need a little bit more comfort. Like, the fellas you see in camper vans driving around sometimes, they have tattoos. You see them there in the summer with... They have vests on them and tattoos. They're tough men, you know.
They are
tough men and tough women.
Yeah.
But like, I'm a delicate little creature. I was never really, you know, roughing it in vans all my life. I bought one 2 years ago, and I decided last winter, I said, this is enough of this now. I need a bit more comfort. And the other thing was, we tried to see, could we get a little house in Donegal? But certainly the book, for me, was like the last book in a series of memoirs. And it completes, in a sense, my reflection on life.
Yeah.
So at the end of life, there was a fantasy I had. I'd love to go to Donegal again. I was there as a child. I used to be there when I was a teenager in the Gaeltacht, and I'd be speaking Irish, and I'd be falling in love with young girls from Dublin and all over the place. And it was the Gaeltacht was just a completely wonderful childhood for me.
Yeah.
Every summer for 4 weeks in Anagri and Aranmore and Ranafast and all sorts of places around West Donegal. And so the dream was, we'll get a house in Donegal.
Of course.
A little house, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll say, with a few pennies that you have saved over the lifetime. And then we saw this nice little thing, and it's very simple, and we said, we're going to buy that. And the next thing, the COVID happened. And we had half the paper signed for the house. And we said to ourselves, now, it'd be very foolish to sign that, because you might never get into it with the whole big COVID that's happening.
That's right.
But we signed it. We signed up for it anyway, Marty. We signed up for it. We got the house. Beautiful little house.
So you have it.
And so we haven't nearly been in it.
But this is what I'm coming to.
We don't have it because
we haven't been in it. But you have the house, but you're not part of it yet.
Not yet. Please God, yeah.
But that might be the next
book. You never know. Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, it might be. I tell you... Like, you know that all my life I'm trying to tell stories about what it feels like to be religious.
Yes.
You know, what it feels like to still have hope, to still have faith, to still dream that the world is kind of blessed and minded by some sort of great consciousness. You can call it God or call it what you want, but in some way... I always believe that we can't save the planet. You know, the way we're damaging trees and we're damaging the ocean. We can't save these things unless we reverence them.
That's right.
Unless I go out into the woods and look at the trees and say, you are my brothers and sisters. You are sacred. You are present in the cosmos, just as I am. And we are all one. We are one single thing in this cosmos. Now, the only way to do that kind of... have some sort of religious imagination, spiritual imagination. And I try and have that. And so for me, the ocean that is around Ireland, if you can imagine, Ireland is a little island and we're getting this big hug. It's a hug all the time. Every wave that laps up in Kerry and Donegal and Waterford and Dublin, it's like hugging the land. It's so beautiful, a kind of an idea. And I just would... I would love to be at the sea a little bit longer.
It's a lovely way of putting it. It really is.
I love Leitrim. I'm not denigrating the beautiful place that I live.
Yes. But you have the aspiration
the sea became like, old man's dream, go to sea.
No harm in that. Listen, I just want to play the Homes of Donegal because I love that song from Paul Brady. Do you know it? It's gorgeous.
A fair play to you. That's lovely.
A lovely song. I'm going to play that now. Serious, it's Paul Brady and the Homes of Donegal. And I'm thinking about the book, What is Beautiful in the Sky, Michael Harding, and I'm thinking to myself, when you talk about sadness and all the rest of it, and you've covered that over all the chats we've had, but you talk about the yellowing leaves of autumn, that don't make you sad anymore and looking forward to the winter. So you're not in a bad place at the present, Michael.
Marty, I think I'm in a very good place, and I'm able to say it.
Yes.
Because I'm of a certain age, and because I've been through a certain amount of trouble on depression and a certain amount of trouble on physical illness.
Yes.
And here's what I'd say. When you come to this age in your life, it's not a bad place to be. It's a beautiful place, and your happiness increases, because what happens is you come to terms with mortality. You finally come to terms with the fact that this is not going to go on forever, that there's some date on the calendar already there that you will be going. And so that sense of impermanence, that sense that I am today looking at the leaves, I am today looking at the beautiful fog that's hanging over the lake here in Lough Allen as I look out the window. Mm. It is so extraordinarily beautiful, but it's even more beautiful because it's passing. And because I'm passing, and because you're passing. You know, we're here for just a second. We're here for a split moment. And it is so sacred, and it is so important to kind of open your heart into the bigger consciousness of the universe. And when you do that, by looking at a little pot plant on your patio, or looking at a big Scotch pine outside my window, whatever way that you embrace the world beyond your own ego is the way to happiness, and it's the way to peace. And that's why in that particular book, What's Beautiful in the Sky, I decided for the final culmination of those memoirs, I wanted to write passionately, in a time of sorrow, in a time of COVID, I wanted to write about what is beautiful.
And you do it with such great eloquence. Can I ask you about the 7th of June, that date that keeps coming up in the book? 7th of June keeps appearing.
It's the eve. There's no significance except that the feast of Columbkill, the Donegal saint, or great man who went to Iona in Scotland, and who probably was the man behind the Book of Kells. I don't know if everybody knows that, but it's fairly kind of conclusively believed that he would have been the kind of overarching artist behind that extraordinary work that's still the major work in Irish art tradition. And his feast day is celebrated on the 8th or 9th of June.
Yes.
And we were coming to the end of the lockdown at the end of June, and I was coming to the end of writing this book, which was a kind of a memories and stories about friends who had passed away and...
Yeah, was it the 7th you had to have it
No, no, no. No, not at all. No. Oh, yeah. The end of June was going to be the end of the lockdown. So I knew I had to finish the book by the end of June. And so I picked this day, which is a kind of a favourite day for me. It's like I still kind of celebrate certain days as special. I take time out. I just kind of do nothing for a day. Might be Christmas Day, or it might be All Souls Day or All Saints Day. And that day in June, for me, is a very special day for no rational reason except that it was the feast day of Columbkill. He's the Donegal man. Yeah. I love Donegal, and sure, that's the only rationale behind it.
And
I had the whole book finished, and I read through it on that day. I told myself, on the eve of Columbkill's feast, I'm going to read through the whole book.
Yeah.
And I did. I got up at about 5 in the morning. I went out and I looked, walked around the grass, and then I came in and I started reading it. And I had it finished and completed, my final proofreading of it, on that particular day.
Right. You see, the 7th of June is my birthday.
And then I sent it off.
Oh, did you? Well, the 7th
You're joking.
Of June... No, 7th of June is my birthday. So I kept seeing the
Happy
7th
birthday.
Of June. Well, it's a bit late, but I kept on seeing the 7th of June.
I wrote it for Marty Whelan.
That's what it was. And I kept on
thinking,
what
Marty Whelan.
What the hell is going on here? Oh, it was very funny. Listen, you mentioned some pals and...
I'll tell you another secret. I'll tell you another secret we've never told anybody.
A good man.
It's also the anniversary of the day that I was ordained.
The 7th of June?
I think it was the 8th of June, actually.
All right.
Yeah.
Really?
Many, many years ago, 1981.
I know, I know. That's been so well covered.
Spent very little time
and
got out of it.
Yeah, no. Listen, you mentioned John O'Donoghue in the book, and it's fascinating.
But anyway, these things are lovely. I think it's lovely for people to have special days.
Yes.
You know, like, in the old days, we had loads of what they called carnival days or festival days. And then when we became industrialised society and rational secular society, we evacuated them all. And one of the sad things about last weekend, I always find it very sad that they changed the feast days in Ireland. The bank holidays don't synchronise with the feast days. It's almost as if they wanted to get away from religion when they changed to bank holidays. And so the Halloween bank holiday is the Monday before Halloween. It makes no sense at all. Do you know that kind of way?
I do.
And I love Halloween. I love the idea of the night before, you know, the winter time comes, November comes, and we all think of the people that we loved, our ancestors, our partners, our children, our parents who have gone before us into another realm. And we pray with them and for them. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. Even if we're post-Christian, it's still good to do it. But so all those little feast days are beautiful.
Yeah, but all you're studying of Buddhism and Christianity and the icons and all of that, Michael, do you have a sense of where you will go when the day comes? Do you have a sense of where we're headed?
I do in a way, Marty, and it's a contradictory statement. In one sense, the fire goes out. That's a Buddhist answer. You know, they ask the Buddha, where do you go when you die? He says, nowhere, the fire goes out. You're over, you're finished, right?
Yeah.
And that's one way to put it, so that if you said to me, do you believe in an afterlife? I'd say, no, I don't really, not at all. It's no, the notion of a kind of a linear afterlife that happens in time after this life is kind of like, no, I wouldn't buy into that at all. I think it's nonsense. But what I do believe in is that whatever is conscious in me, whatever looks through my eyes when I see the trees outside, is deeper than just my ego. That the ground of my ego is further deeper than my ego. It's something else that looks through me. And when I die and you die, that which is in us returns to the oneness of the entire conscious universe. We are not lost. We live forever at a deep level. But it doesn't mean that Marty Whelan and Michael Harding are going to meet up in heaven under a banana tree.
Yeah.
Talking about how did you get on in life. I don't think that's an earlier medieval and simplistic way of thinking about it. I think it's much more beautiful to know that when you listen to the exquisite music that you'd play there in the mornings, you hear the music and you hear the silence between the notes. And it's the silence between the notes that makes every note matter. The shape of the music is shaped because it's punctuating the silence. And in that silence, there's some sense of presence. And when you are being mindful and doing mindful exercises and you meditate and you feel you're present to the trees outside or to your partner or your loved one, again, there's something in that silence of being present that your conscious is part of you, but it's not at the surface level of your ego. And I believe that in that deep sense, we are all cherished and held in a great single unity of the cosmos. And that's where we return. So the leaf, when it's fallen off the tree, doesn't have any anxiety. It doesn't say, oh, I'm falling off the tree. I'm going to die. It's the end of my life. And I think it's the same with humans. It's okay. This is a very natural thing that happens when you pass away.
It's a wonderful
God, image. I'm getting very serious, am
you
I?
You are getting very serious. And when you think about this, do you hear music in your mind, in your mind's eye? Is there music that stirs you, that makes you think of?
I think that, like, I love a huge amount of Russian music, people like Rachmaninov and Schnitke. I love music of Arvo Pärt. I love music of a lot of the Eastern composers who still, in a sense, make sacred music.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That the music in its kind of rhythms is punctuating the silence. And in a strange way, when you're listening to music, you're actually listening to the silence between the notes. You know, there was a great Arthur Rubinstein was a great pianist, and he did all the Chopin music.
Yes.
He was from Łódź in Poland. But he used to say that sometimes when I'm playing Chopin in a concert hall and I come to a note, I can feel the entire audience leaning forward waiting for the next note. that sense of the silence that you get, particularly in Chopin's nocturnes and the beautiful slow piano music, you can hear the silence. And that silence is the exact same silence that you hear inside yourself when you stop talking in your head.
That's right.
When the chatterbox in your head goes off.
Yes.
When you use mindfulness to just, you know, be in the present moment physically with your body, you begin to hear the silence. Now, music is the most complete aesthetic way that expresses that silence, that allows us penetrate that silence, and that actually allows the silence to penetrate us. So, yes, I couldn't live without all that music.
Oh, well, then, well,
I couldn't aspire to anything more than music.
Have
a tin whistle here beside me.
Good man. And you are you playing it often?
I play it. It's like therapy for me. I wouldn't play it in public, but well, I used to play an odd time with friends.
Yes, you did.
I mean, I play it just for fun. I play a note in it.
Please do.
Hold on a minute.
You have it handy. I'm chatting with Michael Harding.
Now, when you hear them notes, when you're playing them, it completely releases you from all logical and rational mind talking. You know, the chatter in your head stops when you take up an instrument. And even if you're just mediocre, that's mediocre whistle playing, obviously. But it's therapy. It is one of the most beautiful therapies that you could ever have, is to get a little instrument and try and play a little tune in it. And the other one, of course, is to listen to Lyric FM, Marty,
the
mornings, playing beautiful music.
And I'm thinking of you.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking
of you. Marty, it's a better way to wake up.
Well, thank you for that, Michael.
It's a better way to wake up. It's true.
Yeah, well, thank you for saying so. We do appreciate it. And I'm thinking about the music that you mentioned. And I'm thinking about the fact that you've been Drumshambo with the Music Festival or over in Achill. You're immersed in that as well, aren't you?
I am. And I'm immersed in kind of liturgical music. You know, when I hear Tibetan Buddhist chanting, it brings me to a place that I can't get to in any other rational way.
Right.
I can't think myself into that position. Or when I hear, for example, I do often listen to the monastery choir in a place called St. Elizabeth's Convent in Minsk. Or when you hear people from the Islamic tradition making utterly beautiful music, or the Jewish tradition, my goodness. So all that liturgical kind of music, from Russian music to Syrian music to Tibetan music, it does something to my heart that no other thing can do. I can't get to that space. Logically, I can't argue myself into that space. And if I listen to kind of politics on the radio, I'll never get to that space.
No, you won't. Your head will be destroyed.
But if I listen to music on Spotify, on Lyric FM, on whatever it is, it raises my heart into a different space, a different attitude, a different kind of way of being in the world when you're singing.
Well, thank you for saying that. Michael, I have gone through chess brain and talking to strangers and hanging with the elephant and staring at lakes, and on Tuesday I'm a Buddhist. And please don't tell me what is beautiful in the sky will be the end of this. I know you've kind of suggested...
Well, listen.
What?
All I'll say is I think it's the best one yet. I think I got a bit clearer in what I'm trying to say. And there's one other thing, Marty. I'm doing a lot of podcasting at the minute on Patreon for people who are in lockdown.
Yes.
I started it when I was on the 13th of April. I just love doing this kind of radio stuff. I know I'm probably bad at it because I get confused and I get overexcited.
But you're not. You're brilliant at it.
I'm overexcited, Marty, at the minute by talking to you because this is like radio and I'm here on my own in Leitrim and it's like weird to be talking to you.
And it's wonderful, but that's
it's
the joy
of it. It's weird to be on radio, isn't it? It's amazing.
It is.
It's a privilege that people would be listening. So I suppose I'm just trying to say it. I'm on the podcast is on Patreon if anybody wants that.
Patreon, that's where you'll find it. Well, listen, Michael, God bless you. Continue good health to you. I look forward to having you sitting in front of me again. And one of the days, no doubt, maybe we'll go and we'll have a bite of grub, which would be lovely when we have the opportunity.
That'd be beautiful, Marty, yeah. That'd be lovely. And I tell you, Marty.
Yes, sir.
Marty, if you're in Donegal next summer.
Yes.
Check me out.
I will.
Come and visit me in my little chock and shanaky.
I would love to. I would absolutely love to. Michael, God bless you and good health to you.
The Storyteller's House.
That's the one. We'll find it. Keep the faith, my friend, and we'll talk again. God bless, Michael.
Thanks, Marty.
Isn't he just wonderful? So many messages coming through that finding him just to be such a tonic. As somebody said, he's a tonic. I'm transfixed and comforted, says Oliver in Sandyford.